Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
Well, time to make the donuts. That's the flour.
Okay, keep going.
Eggs. Slip, slip. Butter.
Can I ask you something?
Mix it all up.
Before we continue.
Sugar. Vanilla. What's up?
This time to make the donuts thing that you say is in reference to a commercial, correct?
Yeah.
From what, like 1989 or something?
It's, you know, once a commercial is out, it's kind of always, if you think about it. You know what I mean? Because I can watch it whenever. So, like, who gives a shit when it's born?
I think our audience tends to skew younger.
Oh, I see.
And I get nervous they don't appreciate your witticisms.
Okay, well, okay, so to back it up, this is a wonderful show. We talk about good things, donuts being one of them. And there's a commercial where somebody was like, time to make the donuts. And then they fell into a big fryer and died for a long time, y'all. And it was on the Super Bowl. So everyone had to see it. And it was live and real. Mm-hmm. Happy Halloween. I could eat a donut right now, though.
Could you? Aren't you full from our dinner, our standard Tuesday dinner?
Well, there's always room for donuts. And I think that was another commercial.
Okay.
That one had Bart Simpson on it. And he said, don't eat my donuts, dude. Hey, do you have any small wonders?
Yes.
Okay.
My small wonder is having you return.
Yes.
It is kind of a slog to caretake a young child by yourself, as many of you may know. And when Griffin returns, I feel a tremendous amount of relief and happiness.
Yeah.
And that is my small wonder.
Mine is being away, getting drinks with the boys, partying, watching late night arena football games.
Literally going to a bar and doing karaoke.
Oh, yeah, we did do that once. It was a fun time. But that was just the once, and the rest of the time was work, sweating, back-breaking work.
The good news, though, is that I caught up on This Is Us.
Oh,
so
America can finally rest easy.
Yes.
My actual small wonder, I'm gonna say, is YouTube tutorials. I've been learning about different music software and like how all that stuff works, and it's cool to be like, there's this huge imposing piece of software that I have to learn how to use. I don't know how to even start, and then it's like, oh, just literally search anything in YouTube how to do it, and you can find out how to do it, y'all.
Are the folks that do YouTube tutorials better than the folks that do travel videos on YouTube?
Oh, yeah. Because they don't, there's very little charisma required in a, you know, here's how to use Ableton Live 10, as opposed to like, hey, I'm going to go to this country and embarrass myself. So who goes first this week?
I believe it's you.
I believe it might be me as well. I got two lil ones this week. Okay. I felt inspired to talk about these two things, and then I realized there's not a lot of meat on these bones. But my first thing is Picture Day. I love Picture Day. Today was Henry's Picture Day, and at his daycare. That was a quick turnaround, first of all.
Yeah, so the company that came to do this is the company that I think did my pictures, like, you know, 20 years ago.
I think it's just the one company, yeah.
And it's called Life Touch.
Yeah.
And when I saw that name, I just thought, oh my gosh, they're still doing it.
Took me on a journey. Yeah, they had the pictures, like the proofs, ready to go this afternoon when we picked them up. I feel like I had to wait. Back in my day, 90s kids remember this, was you had to, like, you would wait like a full 6-week period, and then you would get them all in, and like, you'd get them passed out in homeroom. Yeah, you get the physical ones, and you could like show them to people like trading cards. Like, there was so much anticipation.
You'd cut them out and write on the back.
I love Picture Day for so many reasons. I like it now as a parent because dropping off Henry today in his cute little sweater, seeing all of his like little friends like a little bit more dressed up than usual, and seeing them like have the little background set up with like little pumpkin props.
They
did, yeah.
Nice.
They were like in the process of setting it up, and all the kids were so excited. They actually yesterday sent home Henry with a sticker on his back that said, "Hey, tomorrow's Picture Day." A literal sticker that Life Touch sent out. Like, that's a dope marketing scheme. But I also really liked it as a kid, and I was trying to think about why. I think I could sort of do a whole segment on like a broader category of just school interruptions, like activities that, you know, are going to just, at my high school, like I was sort of tangentially involved in the high school theater program, which is to say I took theater class like every semester, but almost never did any of the plays. But whenever there was a play and they were like ready to put it on, you could just go see it like during a school showing. And then that's like a huge interruption, isn't it? That's like a huge difference because school, like regardless of how you feel about it, I was kind of neutral on it. Is very monotonous in the sense that, like, it's the same thing kind of every day. And so any sort of twist on that is so exciting.
That's a good point, because I always thought of it from the perspective of, oh, the people that had to come to this must be so annoyed. Like when I was in band and they would invite the school to watch us perform, it was always super embarrassing as a member of the band.
Yeah.
Because I was like, everybody hates being here, but you're saying they're just glad not to be in class.
It was awesome. Yeah. Whenever there would be some dude who, there was a dude who came and played volleyball so good to teach us all not to do drugs. And this is like the kind of thing, I feel like me and Justin and Travis reference this a lot about like, I'm going to tear a phone book in half so you'll stop using meth or whatever. Like that was a real thing that people would like come to our school and do.
That happened at our school too, but I was absent that day, and all I heard about for like the next month was that performance.
We got a couple of them, and it was always like, you want to do what now? Yeah, we're going to, I know you're excited to learn about social studies, but we're going to take you in the gymnasium for this period, and you're going to watch a guy do volleyball tricks. And it's like, okay, are you sure? It doesn't seem strictly educational, but if you say so, let's get wild.
Volleyball tricks, I'm not sure, because volleyball inherently requires multiple people to play. So what was this man doing?
He could just
doing?
Like hit a shot from super far away. Like he'd set like a, you know, a bucket
so
down.
So they would set up the net and it would just be him out there on the
court. Well, and then he played three people at a time and like totally beat the shit out of them. It was pretty radical. And as a result, I made the decision to stay drug free that day. Except for weed is fine. He actually said that. He was like, bump, set. Weed's fine, by the way. Spike it! And spike the crystal and all that stuff. Anyway, Picture Day, though, is its own sort of kettle of fish, because while it is an exciting interruption, it's like a weird thing, especially when I was like a little kid. Who are these strangers in the lunchroom? What is that big sheet of paper covered in fucking lasers? Hello, that's pretty rad.
Can I ask how you felt about your Picture Day game?
So I was... And
arguably the cutest McElroy of the three.
Wait for the twist, though.
Okay.
I was, yes, I was the cutest McElroy youngster of the three, but I also had the longest spell after that of just complete unphotogenic, like just disaster boy. I'm saying like I was cute as hell all the way up until 8 or 9, and then like until like 22, it was just like I was incapable of taking a photo that I felt like okay about. So that was quite a bad dry spell. So those first few years, like I got more excited about it. In high school, it was strictly like, you want to do what now? You want to take pictures? Okay, yeah, smile. I forgot how. yeah, like this. But you know, those backdrops were dope. You did have the lasers. We had the paint splotches. That was big. Mm. Did a lot of sitting with one knee up on like a step ladder or whatever.
See, we didn't do that. Ours were always like waist up.
Oh, interesting. We had props. I held a basketball in one picture, like in middle school. Like, who the fuck are you kidding? I had one. I don't know where to find this picture, but I was like in a full blown like denim tuxedo holding a basketball with my knee up on a step ladder.
Can
like,
I ask
who is
you?
That?
Do you consciously remember your mom dressing you for these things, or do you?
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't consciously remember it, but I do know that that is what happened, because if she didn't, like, I would have worn my, like, you know, usual outfit of
your Tasmanian
big
devil
cargo shorts with like, oh, even worse, dude, like a Secret of Mana SNES game promotional t-shirt I got from Babbage's that was like an XL, like too big for my small, you know, 80-pound elementary school frame. Anyway, I just think it's exciting for like to get the day where you get the pictures back. This was huge for senior photos too. Like senior photos, while I did not feel especially comfortable about mine, like I got really into the trading card game of it.
Yeah, because did you get the assortment? Because I remember, and this is probably a big marketing technique of the senior pictures, but there was a suggestion that you get multiple looks and locations.
Oh, yeah,
and
I did
so
that.
Everybody had like the hand on the face, and then the standing in front of something, and, you know, and then maybe like a sassy sitting pose, and
yeah.
you would get all three, and then you would kind of see which ones were most popular with your friends and what they would take.
I think I only had one because my senior photos were a fucking trip, man. It was rough. There was one, I mean, this was in pure, like, thick hair Griffin McElroy. Yeah. This is like, for those who don't know, I did not get a haircut for, I don't know, man, a decade and a half, long ass time. I just got it thinned out over and over and over and over and over again until I formed this like impenetrable sort of dome of just hair, and it was unsightly.
It was still so poofy.
It was so poofy, and yeah, this was like, I think in one of them, I was one of them. Okay, during also, I actually hated this. I hated taking senior photos because it was like, what do you like? And it's like, I don't know. I'm into Ben Folds. I like Ben Folds, and I play the piano. And I forget what like my other thing was, but they're like, all right, we're going to take a picture of you. You're wearing your Ben Folds t-shirt. We've got this tiny toy piano. You're going to hold it out in this hand. And in this one, you're going to hold like a, you know, a PlayStation controller or something like that.
Oh my gosh,
and it's like,
Griffin.
So that's, you want to capture my essence like that, that's fine. I got away fairly easy because I definitely saw pics of Justin and Travis like with the comedy tragedy drama masks. And I was like, nope, there but for the grace of God go I. So yeah, that wasn't great. But taking pictures of school, love that. Club photos, I love it. If you're in a lot of clubs, it's like, I'm not learning anything today. See ya. yeah, it's like the Met Gala for school. And yeah. It's real cute when the subjects are 2 and 3 years old. Holy shit.
I remember, I think it was middle school was the first year where they would let you pick a color that would be behind you.
Mm.
And I remember very thoughtfully picking a color that would go with the sweater that I knew I was going to wear.
Ooh, God.
Like, this was the level I was bringing to it.
How long have you been a fashion icon? Has it been since birth?
Oh, I mean, yes.
Okay.
Yes, I've always had very strong opinions about what I was wearing.
Yeah.
Tell us
about your look right now. Describe your look right now.
Well, I'm wearing sponsored lounge pants.
And sponsored socks, Jesus Christ.
And sponsored socks and a pink hooded sweatshirt I've had for about 9 years.
It's true. I think you had that before I knew you.
And a shirt, a tank that I got while I was pregnant with Henry.
Okay. It's fresh. It's fresh as hell.
So here we go.
You got the basic robin's egg blue, green gingham checker pattern, pink hoodie over a gray stretchy tank top. That's the look for summer 2020.
Yeah.
What's your first thing?
My first thing is,
I just watched you put a soda on the screen of your iPhone as if it was like Steve Jobs's future coaster. I just watched that happen and you didn't even make a big deal out of it. You were just
like,
do you
want me to not do that?
It's fine. But you like picked up your can of beverage to get it out of the way of your notes and you just put it there's other places you could put it and you just very casually put it on the screen of your iPhone. It's the wildest thing I've ever seen.
Do you want me to move it?
Let's say no and I'll see if I can pay attention to anything else.
My first thing is the album Is This It by The Strokes that came out in 2001.
You are always talking about this,
yes,
album and the songs upon it.
Yes. Yeah, it was kind of the timing for a few reasons. First of all, I was brand new in college, right?
Mm.
And so all of college was kind of going to parties and seeing what people were playing.
Right.
You know? The other thing was the timing of this album made it so like exciting and different than anything else. So I was doing a little research because I remember when this album came out by The Strokes.
Would you say 2001?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was thinking like, this doesn't sound like anything that's happening right now. And so I went online to look and see what was popular in 2000. And it was like Christina Aguilera, Savage Garden, Jessica Simpson. This was when Eiffel 65 came out with Blue.
Sure.
A lot of like really poppy music, you know, that was very kind of radio, homogenous, I guess. Right. I don't know. Like,
were the Strokes on the radio? Is that the comparison? Because there was definitely, you know, underground alternative music.
No,
happening.
I'm just saying, like, the biggest, most popular stuff that you, like, I was hearing at parties didn't sound anything like this.
Right.
And then I heard the Strokes and I was like, oh my gosh, it was the first time in a while, probably the first time since I heard Weezer, that I remember thinking, like, oh, who is this band? I want to know everything about them as soon as I heard it. So the Strokes released this album. This was their debut album. And it made a whole bunch of like lists, like Rolling Stones. It was number two on Rolling Stones 100 best albums of the 2000s.
Holy shit.
Number one was Kid A.
Oh, okay.
You know, understandably.
Well, except it's okay. When did OK Computer come out? Was that in the 90s?
See, you're one of those.
Okay.
Well, people,
a better album.
People have very strong opinions about.
I didn't know that.
Radiohead albums.
Okay.
And a lot of people are like either OK Computer or Kid A.
OK Computer is so good. Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Computer.
And the story of the band is kind of interesting. So they're a lot like more fancy pants than I think I realized.
Because I know nothing about them.
They come across as real grungy. Like they, it was kind of. What I saw online was that they kind of ushered in what they called the garage rock revival of this like idea of like rock and roll as like it was popularized, you know, decades ago. But so these guys in the band were at like fancy schools in New York. And then one of them went to boarding school in Switzerland and met another of the members in Switzerland. And then they came back to New York and went to the Tisch School of the Arts. So they're like all like classically trained, like a super fancy individual.
I was going to say, so they Vampire Weekended it, but I think Vampire Weekend Strokes did, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing about the Strokes is that after the Strokes, that's when bands like the Killers and Arctic Monkeys and Jet and Franz Ferdinand, like all these bands rose up like, oh, can we do rock and roll again? Great.
That's interesting. I never thought of them being sort of the progenitors of that whole sort of every sort of college band that was big when I, that's one of the funny things about our age difference is like you were into the OG shit. And I had the carbon copies.
So I wanted to play two songs. And before I continue, I wanted to play the song Hard to Explain. This is one of like kind of the first songs that really hooked me off the album and gives you kind of a sense of kind of what the Strokes are all about.
Play Last Night?
No.
Was that on this album?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I assume everybody knows Last Night, which might not be true.
I was recently informed that our audience skews young, so they may not know about the donuts commercial, and they may not know about Last Night. I was not super familiar with it until it showed up on a rock band, which is true of most music.
So this album was released in the UK first, and it featured a black and white photo of a gloved hand on a woman's naked backside.
What?
Very scandalous.
Her fanny?
Yes. So this is October 2001. And so that was part of the reason the album was released late. The other was that they had a song called New York City Cops that was a little critical of police exactly a month after September 11th. Yeah. So there was kind of a delay on the album release here as compared to the UK. But yeah, then it was named Best Album of the Year by Entertainment Weekly and Time Magazine. It kind of blew up. Pitchfork gave it a 9.1, which is uncommon for Pitchfork to score so well. And here's what they said in the review that I thought was really apt. They said, "The Strokes have struck an incredible balance between the two extremes of rock music, sentimentality, and listlessness. Any sentimentality in these songs' lyrics is countered by Casablancas, who's one of the lead singer in the band, self-reliant indifference, and his listless delivery is offset by the band's fervid attack."
Yeah.
I like that a lot. There's this kind of like drowsiness to it, this kind of like I don't know, just this kind of rock and roll like energy. Like they cite the Velvet Underground as kind of one of their big influences, and you can really kind of hear that. So the other song I wanted to play is The Modern Age, which is another really good song off the album that you may not have heard before. Strokes is one of those bands. I just listened to the whole album again today just to kind of remind myself that I still liked it. Every single song on there is great.
Yeah.
I used to go, there were these guys that we were friends with, and they would have house parties because they lived kind of on the street in our college town where everybody had house parties, and they would just play this album every single time, front to back, every time they had people over. And I just always loved it.
That's
I was just obsessed
great.
With it. It was great.
Can I steal you away?
Yes.
Can I sing Last Night to get us there? Because I've run out of good ideas of how to edit the Home Improvement song.
Okay.
It's something like, in case you haven't heard it, I did want people to know, it's like, last night, she said, let's get begin with my day they don't understand.
There it is.
That's basically how it goes, in case you didn't know.
Can I read you a personal message?
Yes, you can.
This message is for Julia Small Crimes Gaskell. It is from George Coolstanza. The Portland Mabim Band never got released, so I paid $100 to tell everyone the cool nickname the brothers gave me, but also to tell you I love you. I think we'd be best friends no matter what. You make the best cheesecake, and you make a lot of dogs happy.
That is a sweet message, and I don't even remember what the show is.
George Coolstanza is really good.
George Coolstanza is very powerful. And
you don't think that was you?
I don't know.
Do you think it's got Travis energy?
It has big Travis energy, if I were to guess. Here is a message for Josh, and it's from Lauren, who says, I found out I got a Jumbotron today while we were buying corn dogs and 40s of High Life in Shoppers, and I got so excited that I spilled the beans. Now we get to be excited about this together. Josh, you are my best friend, the kindest person I know, and the greatest mouse dad ever. Thanks for being there for me always. I don't know why I skipped the always in there. Thanks for conditionally being there
fun,
for me.
A fun reveal.
Thanks for being there
way.
For me. Always. I love you forever, Lauren. And this is so great. They say, what's your preferred time frame? And Lauren said, whenever is okay. I'm flexible. That's so nice.
That is really nice.
Whenever Josh needs to hear it, Lauren's going to be here to slap those beans out of her hand. I think I may have misread the whole thing.
Have you ever bought corn dogs at the grocery store?
Where else am I going to get them?
I don't know that I've ever bought like a frozen corn dog that I have heated at home. I'm not a huge corn dog fan.
Yeah, I guess not.
But like, so for example, I've bought a frozen soft pretzel hundreds of times. Never a corn dog, though. I wonder, what's that cooking process like? Do you know?
I don't know. I'm having a little bit of trouble picking up on the microphone because you're shouting down to me from the deck of your super yacht.
And these corn dogs, now how does one eat them? Are they ears of corn with dog ears on them?
Do you pay someone to eat it for you as you watch?
Hello, my name is Tusk Henderson, and I am an outdoorsman.
Are you looking for a new comedy podcast? This month's episode of Beef and Dairy Network podcast has as its guest the wonderful Nick Offerman, playing the part of Tusk Henderson, adventurer and outdoorsman.
Think about fitting yourself, a month's worth of provisions, and a half-ton cow into a kayak.
So if you've never listened to the show before, this might be a good place to start.
I string a bowstring between her horn tips and I can fire a spear off the top of her head. And took in some very delicious cod.
So, if you're after a new comedy podcast, why not try the Beef and Dairy Network from Maximum Fun? Download it now!
You flip a cow upside down, they make an excellent toboggan.
Can I do my second thing?
Yes.
Again, little bits, but okay. Bits that are important to me.
Okay.
Bits that are so powerful.
That's what this show's all about, babe.
Peacoat.
Yes.
Get yourself a freaking peacoat. My God, I love a peacoat.
I love that one week you brought a light jacket.
This is different. Oh my God, this is so different though. This now is you're so saying different.
Heavy jacket.
I have been wearing not just any heavy jacket, a pea coat. A pea coat. I've exclusively owned pea coats as like my winter coat solution since I was in like high school.
I remember always when had pea coats became a thing and I had to get one right away.
You had to. It is. I'm not a very fashionable person, but when I put on a pea coat, I feel like I'm about to go to the opera. I love a pea coat. It looks so, so good. It looks good on anyone. I've never seen anyone wear a pea coat.
That's true.
Seriously, I've never seen anyone wear a pea coat where I didn't say like, that looks great on you.
That's true.
I haven't even seen that many bad peacoats. Like, it's hard to fuck a peacoat up.
No.
It all looks really, really good, and I just always got to get one. I actually didn't have one for a little bit, and this year we were in tour in New Orleans, and it was unseasonably cold, and I bought a peacoat at freaking H&M, so it was, you know, like $13 and supposed to fall apart, like, after I wore it three times, but it's held up, and it looks great, and it's from H&M, so it's not even like you got to drop a bunch of cash on it. It's a peacoat. It's going to look really good. It keeps you really warm. It serves its purpose as a...
It's not super bulky either.
No.
That's the big thing with a lot of winter coats is you get that huge puff and like you look like you're wearing a trash bag. Not with a peacoat.
Right, yeah. Now, I will say I did buy a coat like that when we went up to a friend's cabin up in Minnesota.
Yeah, you need that kind of stuff.
You need that
Minnesota.
Because it's going to be... here's the only thing peacoat can't do. It's heavy wool, so if it gets wet, you're going to die. That's the only thing about peacoat is that if you're living in Chicago and there's snow on the ground like 9 months out of the year and it touches the snow and gets cold, you die in it because it keeps it in you.
With a puffy coat, you get that vacuum seal around your wrists and your waist. You don't get that with a peacoat.
Yeah, that's all right. But I don't actually necessarily love the puffy coat warmth. I kind of get sweaty.
Too much?
I get a little sweaty in there. I get a little baked potato-y.
Yeah.
Pea coat, I can open it up. I can do whatever. What I really like about a pea coat, this was my style when we were just on tour up in Philadelphia and New York, is that it was pretty cold, except for like we'd get to wherever we were going and then it would be kind of hot. I could wear a t-shirt underneath the pea coat.
Whoa.
You can wear short sleeves underneath the pea coat. Pea coat's going to be fine. It's going to dress you up to that and it's going to step it up. It's going to step it up to that next level. And then you show up to wherever you're going, take your pea coat off. Now you've just like dropped it down a little bit and you're casual with your friends.
I have a whole montage in my head of you in your hotel room wearing like a t-shirt and looking at your long sleeve shirts and then looking at your pea coat and then just like getting wild eyes and thinking, I don't have to wear a long sleeve shirt under this at all.
I love that realization. It is so freeing. I tell you what also is like my number one jam. I don't actually necessarily have a great combination for this now, but living in Cincinnati and Chicago, like every time I left the house, you know, I was wearing a hoodie under the peacoat. So bohemian.
Yes. With the I love that look. I discovered that look in Chicago too.
Yeah.
Of wearing the hooded sweatshirt under a coat. And then like a beanie on the head and a scarf and gloves.
Yes, 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 yes. It's so good. That's good fashion. Because in Chicago, it's never you get inside the place you're going and you're like, ooh, now it's too hot. It's still pretty cold in here. So I do need the hoodie on. But then if it is too hot, you take the fucking hoodie off.
Griffin lives for cool weather fashion. I will say this about you. I feel like you always dress like it's a little colder than it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I put on a sweater, for example, you get so excited.
I do. I love it on you. I love you in a sweater. I can't deny it. It's coming up. It's about to be all sweater time. Yeah. You're going to be wearing a sweater. And like one day, like we're going to be chilling on a Saturday with like maybe a window open and maybe got a crock pot of chili going.
Yeah. And I've got the sweater on.
And you got a sweater on.
My little cheeks are rosy.
Oh, I can't wait, man. I can't wait. Big buttons are great. I like the big collar. That's fresh. So many pockets. Oh my God. So many pockets.
Oh, like on the inside?
I got one on the inside. On both sides, you can get the slit pockets, like the vertical pockets, and then the horizontal, deep, deep, deep pockets. Mm-hmm. Love a peacoat because, like, you know, it gets to be middle of February here in Austin, and now it's summer. I hang up the peacoat in the closet. Come October, I get the peacoat to put it back on. Oh, what's that? I've got some fucking... you know, some Mike and Ike's in there.
Maybe you got an iPod Nano.
Maybe you have an iPod Nano or an iPad Mini because those pockets are so dang big. Anyway, the pea coat. The pea coat has military origins, as you might imagine. You look at it, it's kind of a military cut.
Yeah.
They would wear this in the Navy. The first time it appeared in American newspapers was in the 1720s, although it was a European Navy garment first worn by sailors. There's a variation called the bridge coat, which is just like a little bit longer. It goes down right to the thighs. And, you know, if you didn't want to freeze to death standing on a boat in the middle of the Arctic, like you would wear one of these dope ass jackets and look super, super cool. If you were, you know, a decorated officer, you would wear a variation of it called a reefer, which just means that it has gold buttons and epaulettes, which I did not know about. And what's wild is just like how little that style has changed.
No, it's so classic.
I remember watching Dunkirk, and while I was watching Dunkirk, I was like, this is fucking peacoat city. All these chaps are wearing the most beautiful peacoats. The peacoat budget for this film must have been like off the chains, unless they did like a bulk pickup from H&M. And it still looks like I could grab any one of those off one of these unfortunately deceased Navy fighters and throw it on my own body, which one character does in the movie, no spoilers, and look fresh as hell.
Yeah.
Even though it's from, you know, whenever that movie took place. I think it was one of the World Wars, probably one, but maybe two. Anyway, I love it. I love it. Oh, the name peacoat. There is an academic journal of nautical research that's called The Mariner's Mirror. That's, first of all,
really
incredibly
nice.
Powerful. And in a 1975 edition of The Mariner's Mirror, they tracked the etymology of the term peacoat. And they traced it to a Dutch word, which is peajacker. I know that I'm probably saying that wrong, in which pidge is a coarse twilled blue cloth, while jacker is jacket or coat or whatever. Although the U.S. Navy has their own sort of etymology, which is that the cloth that like Navy folks used to wear in cold weather was called pilot cloth, which was essentially the same thing, you know, twilled coarse blue cloth, which is, you know, essentially like the wool garment that peacoats are made out of. But because it was called pilot cloth, they would call it a pea cloth or pea jacket. So, no one knows for sure. History debates it. It's just like a formality chameleon, the peacoat. If I go to a nice restaurant, I can be like, please hang up my peacoat alongside the other nice jackets that the fancy people have brought. Because that's a peacoat from H&M. So be gentle with the stitching. It's incredibly fragile because it's not very well made. What's your second thing?
My second thing is one of those things that when I thought of it, I got really excited to talk about it.
Which is?
Because it's universally enjoyable.
I just said which is, but it made it sound like I said witches.
How did you guess?
Oh, wow.
No, it's the Guinness Book of World Records.
Just the whole thing?
Yeah.
Not one specific person, just the whole thing?
I mean, I'll get to some people.
Okay.
For sure.
I love it.
Guinness Book of World Records. Do you remember this as a kid? Like,
discovering
this existed and thinking it was the best thing in the world?
Yes, absolutely.
Especially when we were kids before the internet and you couldn't just like look stuff up. This book like held all of the exciting information you really wanted to know.
I remember going to Pigeon Forge or was it Gatlinburg that has a like Guinness Book of World Records, like museum. And it was like a full like tourist trap. Like, here's the longest long jump ever recorded. How far can you go on it? And it's like, not even close because I don't know anything about jumping.
So I want to tell you the origin and then we'll get to some of the good stuff.
I'm very curious.
Okay. So I'm going to say a name and it's going to be kind of a funny name. And so I want you to ready yourself. Okay.
Is it going to be funnier than P-Jacker? Because I messed that up, I think.
Yes,
pretty bad.
It is.
Okay.
In the 1950s, Sir Hugh Beaver.
H-U-G-H?
Yep. I'm just going to give you a little time on that one.
Okay. I'm good.
He was the managing.
I'm not good. It's a funny name.
He was the managing director of Guinness Brewery. And he attended a shooting party with his friends where everyone started arguing about what the fastest game bird in Europe was.
A shooting party?
Yes.
That's a bad party.
You know, like they go to shoot pheasants or whatever, and they're all sitting there talking about what the fastest bird is, and they can't decide.
But that's called hunting. Whenever my friends, it would be deer season or whatever, they wouldn't be like, time to go have a woodland shooting party.
Well, shooting party may just be like, you all stand there, we release the animals and you shoot them.
Oh, that's...
I'm not 100% on that, but it's possible that that's the distinction.
How sporting.
In 1954, he developed a Guinness Book of World Records, and around the idea that it was affiliated with Guinness because it would help settle pub arguments.
I had no idea that it was the beer.
You just thought Guinness, that was just a coincidence?
It's a name, like, it's a just a word. I never really put it together. And you never, I feel like I've never seen the two of them in the same room.
No, that's true. That's true. So before I get into some of the records, I wanted to talk about some of the criteria. So the way it works, people submit applications to be considered. And right now the waiting period for applications is up to 16 weeks.
Huh, okay.
And in order to submit a competitive application, what you submit has to be measurable, has to be replicated so that people can break it, and can be proven, obviously. And then, you have to have kind of an awareness of whether anyone in the world has done it better, you know, obviously, if you're going to submit.
Do you have to pay also with your submission, I imagine?
I did not look into it that far.
Okay. So it's a profit gain.
Although I did notice that, you know, so there's a maximum of 16 weeks, but they said like for emergency consideration, you can like expedite your application, which makes me think there is money involved. But also I wonder, what is the emergency situation?
Yeah, I know. I've been on fire for an hour.
And then there are guidelines as to what is not suitable. Obviously things that could cause harm or endanger animals. One of them is excessive eat.
That one's funny, given the origins of the book. No, we don't want anybody endangering any more animals.
Anymore, we stopped.
Figured out what the funnest bird to shoot and kill in the sky is. And then that was the last one.
I want to talk about excessive eating.
Okay.
So now, instead of saying who can eat the most, it's who can consume a large quantity in a small period of time.
Interesting.
So the idea is, so for example, let me give you an example.
Were people getting hurt? Like, is it a liability thing?
I think, I mean, you know, it's a way of endangering yourself.
Yeah, sure.
So for example, in 2014, Tokaru Kobayashi ate 12 hamburgers in 3 minutes. So that's kind of what they're talking about.
Right.
Short time frame, you know, eat as much as you can.
Okay. That's interesting. It makes complete sense because I see some of those like man versus food eating challenges and just like it seems like like a path for extreme disaster.
Yeah. Like if somebody, you know, became very, very ill trying to break this record, I think Guinness would feel a little responsible.
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't because they're a huge, huge faceless company, but somebody probably would along the chain low on it.
No wasting food. Which
huh?
is questionable.
What?
They suggested that you have to kind of balance how you might waste food with how you would donate, you know, materials to replace.
If this is like my Boy Scout troop made the world's biggest bowl of borscht.
Yeah.
Then somebody like Sir Alec Guinness would roll up and be like, that's dope. That's dope. Great job. But who's eating all this borscht?
Is Alec Guinness affiliated with the Guinness Brewery?
No, but they probably hired him because of the name.
Okay. They also...
Is he just dead, yes?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Nobody does. No consumption of alcohol as part of the records.
Guys?
I know, it's complicated.
What?
Well, they don't want people to binge drink and end up in the hospital trying to beat
that
some
makes
kind
sense
of...
too. It's just like, that is... You know, except for our one thing. Very creamy, very dark, delicious devil's beverage.
So let me get into some of the records here.
Oh boy. Biggest muscles, Griffin.
Heaviest? No. I see what you did there.
Biggest, strongest muscles is Griffin. Austin, Texas.
Heaviest carrot, 22 pounds. I'm just going to go through these. I'm just going to just shout these out.
Okay. I'll holler if there's one I need more.
Most M&M's eaten in 1 minute blindfolded with chopsticks, 20 in 2011.
Doesn't that
seem achievable?
That seems incredibly doable. I'm inspired by that one. Is it possible to just stab downward into them very sharp with sharp chopsticks?
Okay. I doubt it.
Okay.
I doubt it. Longest time in plank position, 8 hours and 1 minute.
In plank position. Isn't that just laying down?
No, that's when you're kind of, you're propped up, like your toes are on the ground and your elbows are.
They should call it something else.
I thought this was interesting because this was like a competition that was held and the longest guy got 8 hours and 1 minute and he beat out the other guy who only got 7 hours and 40 minutes.
So this dude went hard in the paint for an extra 20 minutes just to like rub it in? Okay.
Largest collection of Pokemon memorabilia, 17,127 items.
Griffin McElroy.
I looked at this. So this was verified in 2016 when they asked the winner, Lisa Courtney, what was on her wish list. She told us, I'm still searching for the Pokemon Center deluxe size Tyranitar plush.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what this is?
That's a tough one. That's a tough one. That's going to put Henry through college, this Tyranitar plush I've got.
Longest Mario Kart marathon is 40 hours, and that's three guys in Iowa City in 2018 all got together.
That seems exceedingly doable. Seems like I may have accidentally broken that one.
There is one gentleman who has set more than 600 records himself and currently holds 200 active titles.
Oh, my God.
He is 62 years old. He lives in New York. His name is Ashrita Furman. His first record was doing 27,000 jumping jacks over 6 hours and 45 minutes.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
I've just decided.
That got him a spot in the 1980 edition of the Guinness Book of World Records. He has broken a record on every continent. Other records include most fire torches lit and extinguished in 1 minute, fastest mile on a pogo stick, longest time to hula hoop underwater, most arrows broken with the neck in 1 minute.
Most arrows broken with the neck.
I haven't seen a video, but I have to imagine he's either putting them on his shoulder and snapping them.
I mean, he's not doing it long ways because that's a good way to
very
die.
Very dangerous.
That seems like some of those, though, I feel like I could call up Guinness tomorrow.
I mean, here's the thing, though. That can be replicated. It can be measured.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm just saying I could call up Guinness tomorrow and be like, hey, just so you know, tomorrow morning, I'm planning on trying to see how many Kit Kat bars I can sit on in 1 minute. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be like 35. So you may want to get your photographers down here for this.
The last one I took note of is greatest distance traveled on a bicycle balancing a milk bottle on his head.
It's just like most yo-yos yelled at in 5 minutes.
One I personally found mind-boggling. So heaviest triplets.
Hmm.
This happened in the great country of the United States. Three triplets. One was 8 pounds, 9 ounces. One was 7 pounds, 5 ounces. And the other was 6 pounds, 13 ounces. These are like big old full-size babies in one person.
Triplets are usually quite
triplets
smaller,
are usually
yes.
pretty tiny because they all have to fit in a person.
Right.
Those are big babies.
That's a lot of babies.
That's a lot of babies.
That's much babies, folks.
I mean, so for context, Henry was 6 pounds, 9 ounces. He is smaller than the smallest baby in that group of three.
We're talking about having fully, if I'm doing the math right, about 22 pounds worth of baby inside
you. Uh-huh.
That's rough stuff, man.
There. If you go to their website, there's a lot more stuff on there. It's so fun. For somebody that enjoys like statistics and facts and just oddities, this is like everything all in one.
Yeah.
And so good.
Look out for me. I'm going to go do how many napkins can you, how many paper towels can you pull out of a paper towel dispenser at the Austin airport? I'm going to do that one tomorrow. Looking forward to it in 1 minute. So going to be great. You want to know what our friends at home are talking about?
Yes, please.
Well, I will do that once my computer unlocks. they're talking about, Allie specifically is talking about, my small wonder is that our 2.5-year-old daughter has started saying, it's just farts, all exasperated, a la Jerry Gergich, whenever I ask if she pooped.
That's perfect.
That's good. That's really good. Henry started to acknowledge that he farted when I asked him if it's a poop. And he hasn't necessarily landed that Jerry Gergich like cadence.
Yeah.
But he does say farted, which is great because he sounds like Ben Affleck. He sounds like he sounds like fucking Matt Damon in Good Will Hunting. Yeah, farted. Lauren says, hello, my small wonder is finally getting past a difficult boss fight in a video game after being stuck on it for a while. The feeling of accomplishment is great, and the game usually rewards you with cool new stuff, making it even better. I'm trying to think of something that you would find.
Dr. Robotnik.
Yeah, he's one.
He's one.
I don't know that Dr. Robotnik gives you this sort of soul satisfaction. Like, I mean, when you hit jump him on with his your head.
You hit him with your head a bunch of times and he blows up.
That's true.
That's pretty great.
Did you ever do that? And then you were like, oh, and now I retire on top.
I mean, I never beat Sonic, so I never felt like.
I never did either.
You know, that was one of those games where you just start at the very beginning every time.
And it was so fast.
It was very fast.
I want a leisurely stroll.
His fast shoes.
Give me a bonk any day of the week. You know what I mean?
I don't know what you're talking about now.
Give me a Mario anytime. Do you know what I mean? Uh-huh. That's all I have for submissions, and I do want to say thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use for our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And
can you give out the email for our submissions again?
Yes, it is wonderfulpodcast@gmail.com, I believe. Yes. I'm going to double check that while Rachel extols the virtues of Maximum Fun.
Thank you to Maximum Fun for hosting our show on the network. That's MaximumFun.org. You can find a lot of really great shows there. Shows that are comedic and also shows that are informative, like Bullseye, for example. Great interviews on there.
Beef
there
was and Dairy
a
Network.
Great
is,
one
oh.
with David Diggs recently.
Oh, yeah. I still haven't listened to that one. Beef and Dairy Network is also very good. I think we're doing a promo for them and it made me laugh. Anyway, it is wonderfulpodcast@gmail.com. So hit us up.
Yeah.
Go to macroy.family. We've got all kinds of stuff. We're working on some merch.
We're going to have some merch. Do we have a projected?
We do not have a projected date. The gears of merchandising grind.
I got to see like a mock-up and I was very excited about that.
Yeah, we'll let you know. We're looking forward to it. Anything else that we need to say, that we need to talk about? Anything you want to get off your chest? Let's do our usual, just sort of like venting the, you know, the rage. Because it all can't be smiles and rainbows and, you know, thick dogs all the time. Sometimes Rachel and I are filled with just inky vitriol, and now let's just start spewing it out. So you start.
I'm real mad that they're only releasing one episode of Great British Baking Show a week.
Yeah,
because we watch that episode and then we have to wait a whole week, and that really grinds my gears.
Really fucking tear them apart. Yeah. I ate a little bag of Doritos today, like a fun size bag. I haven't done that in God knows how long, and there were only like six of them in there.
Six chips in there?
Six freaking chips.
Mm. And you know how expensive food is at the airport. Oof.
What's up, though?
So.
But it's so good. And
that's
tasty.
How they get you.
It tastes good and it's convenient.
That's how they get
that
you,
That it's right
though.
There. And the Doritos did taste very good.
Mm-hmm. Cool Ranch, right?
Cool Ranch was good. Damn it, we're doing the show again.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.